think much about his Slayer responsibilities at the moment. What he really wanted was to take a hot shower, put on a clean shirt, and then maybe rewind a few years, back to when he and Henry were friends and brothers. But he knew that would never happen. Time only ever marched forward, no matter how hard you pushed back. Not really. I have an idea who... He bit the inside of his cheek for a moment, hoping that Patty either wouldn't notice that he just referred to a vampire as a person rather than a thing. His Uncle Abraham would have punished him for a slip-up like that for sure. What might be responsible, but I don't know how to say it. Between you and me, Patty, I don't really want to say it at all. The last sentence came out in a whisper, and when it did, Joss's heart reached out after it, but only managed to grab air. He knew better than to say things like that. He knew better than to ever admit to anything at all like that, especially to another Slayer. The punishment of withholding information from a fellow member of the society could be severe. But this wasn't just any member of the society, he told himself. This was Patty. If he could trust any member of his team, it was her. She tilted her head to the side curiously. Who? There was that word again. Who? This time, Patty had said it, which might mean that they were both sharing the same questions about whether vampires were people or things, or maybe he was just reading too much into it, which was likely the case. Joss wet his lips and met Patty's eyes, hoping that she wouldn't freak out the way he'd felt like freaking out when he'd found out that Cyrus was still alive. After taking a slow, deep breath, he released it in words that felt almost too intense to be spoken aloud. They were life-changing words, and Joss didn't feel important enough to be changing anyone's life. I think that maybe Cyrus is the vampire responsible for the deaths. Patty, he didn't die in that explosion. I just saw him the other day. Cyrus is still alive. To Joss's shock, Patty didn't even flinch at the news. Instead, she said, You probably want to grab a shower, right? I think I have one of Morgan's t-shirts around here somewhere that you can borrow. Patty, he shook his head at her, confounded. What? Was she in denial? Did she think that he was kidding? Joss would never kid about something like that. This was supposed to be life-changing news. Why was she acting like it wasn't really news at all? Didn't you hear me? I said that Cyrus is still alive. I heard you, Joss, but, well, you're not exactly telling me anything that I didn't already know. She sighed as Joss stood there, shaking his head still, trying to wrap his mind around what it was that she was saying. Then she nodded toward the bathroom door. Take your shower, then we'll talk. Towels are in the cabinet over the sink. I'll find you a shirt. He stood there for a moment, not knowing exactly what he was supposed to say to her and struggling with the growing realization that Patty hadn't been surprised. She'd known about Cyrus, which made him wonder what else she knew that she wasn't sharing with him. Without another word, he moved down the short hall to the small bathroom. The towels were right where she'd told him they'd be, and when he stripped down and stepped into the shower, the hot water felt good on his skin. As he watched the blood run down the drain, Joss thought about the movies. In movies, killing wasn't all that messy. Blood hardly went anywhere. The mess of it was easy to contain, but the reality he'd found was far different. Blood got everywhere, and it refused to be easily cleansed away. Plus, it smelled. It took a lot of soap just to remove the rotten, metallic scent from his skin, and even then, he knew he wouldn't feel completely clean for the next few days. It was as if the essence of the blood clung to him, the memory of the horrific act that he'd performed. He didn't know what was going on with Patty, or how she'd known anything about Cyrus still being alive, but he did know that he trusted her, and if she had good reason not to tell him about Cyrus, reason beyond the fact that he was supposed to be on his own this summer, then it was okay. She'd explain everything, and then maybe Joss could go back to not feeling betrayed. Because he felt that way, and it hurt. Once his skin and hair were clean, Joss stepped out of the shower, towel dry, and got dressed again. He dropped his towel, now tinged from the blood that had refused to be rinsed away, in the hamper and stepped out into the hall. Patty was in the kitchen. As she tossed him a clean t-shirt, the timer on the oven went off. Donning a bright pink oven mitt, she opened the oven door and pulled out a tray of freshly baked snickerdoodle cookies. Joss sat wordlessly on one of the bar stools by the kitchen island, his eyes on the pan that she was placing on the stove. Cookies. Clearly, he was either in trouble or in for some bad news. He had to be. She'd felt the need to soften the blow with cinnamon and sugared deliciousness. Patty slid two hot cookies onto a plate with the aid of a spatula and set it in front of Joss. He grabbed one immediately and bit into it, breathing out a series of sounds that weren't really words, but somehow helped to cool his burning mouth. Hot, 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 hot. She poured a glass of cool milk, and Joss couldn't drink it fast enough. After he emptied it, his stomach gurgled a little, but at least his mouth felt better. He left the second cookie on the plate, giving it time to cool, and looked at Patty.
So you knew about Cyrus surviving that explosion?
Yes.
She removed her oven mitt, tossing it casually on the counter. Then she turned back to Joss, a newly born tension in her stance.
I knew.
How long have you known? Since the beginning? And you never told me? I've been living with crushing guilt for 2 years and you just let me live with it? You let me believe that I killed my mentor? My friend, Kat's dad? He hadn't intended to raise his voice or to stand, his chest heaving in anger, but that's just what he did. It wasn't right for Patty to have kept this from him. Cyrus had been a beacon of comfort for him during an incredibly difficult time. He'd been there for Joss when it seemed that no other Slayer would help him. More than that, he'd been like a father to Joss. His betrayal had stung. But what had stung far worse was the false knowledge that Joss had been responsible for Cyrus's death.
Hold it right there.
Patty pointed at him with a lone finger and then gestured for him to take his seat again. Out of respect, he did. Then it was Patty's turn to raise her voice.
First and foremost, I hadn't known from the beginning. I only learned of his survival this spring and didn't tell you because I was under strict orders by the society not to. What with your loyalty under question and whatnot.
Loyalty.
You know, that thing that the Slayer Society values more than anything. That thing that you've been apparently lacking ever since the day you met that Vlad kid.
Joss winced. He couldn't refute what she was saying. It was true. It was all true. He hadn't been nearly as loyal in thought or in deed as the Slayer Society required or deserved. But he couldn't blame Vlad for that, or even Patty for pointing it out. He could only blame himself.
Second, don't forget that that friend and mentor of yours was also a vampire.
The word hung in the air between them for a moment. It felt heavy, felt wrong. And what was worse was that the truth of that word felt so much heavier than the word itself. Joss hated that Cyrus was a vampire. He hated that he still cared about Cyrus. He hated that he still cared about Vlad. But he was beginning to think that that aspect of him could never be changed. What if everyone he came to care about betrayed him in some way? Cyrus, Dorian, Vlad? It seemed that he was meant to be more of a vampire's plaything than a slayer. The very idea sent a bitter shiver up his spine. Chasing it was the whisper of sorrow. The look on Patty's face said that she felt very much the same way that Joss did. It made Joss wonder how the Slayer Society felt about Patty and her loyalties to them. They questioned his loyalty. Why not question hers?
He betrayed us, Joss. Not just the Society. He betrayed our team, and did so over a long course of time. Plus, he wasn't just your friend. He was also mine. So don't think that you're the only one affected by his perceived death or surprising survival.
Joss released a quiet sigh. What Patty was forgetting was that she didn't exactly have to carry the weight of guilt at having been the person who'd caused Cyrus's perceived death. Patty braced herself with her hands on the countertop and hung her head for a moment, long enough to take two or three really slow, deep breaths, as if she needed to gather her wits before she spoke again. Then she met Joss's eyes, and when she spoke again, he realized that he'd been behaving rather selfishly. He wasn't alone in this pain, in this confusion. She shared it.
I'm freaked out too, you know.
Joss eyed his remaining cookie for a moment, but had no desire whatsoever to pick it up and continue eating. Suddenly, his mouth tasted sour, unworthy of a sugary reward. He met Patty's eyes with an apology.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't bite your head off just for following society orders. It was a surprise to see him.
She nodded slowly, and it was clear to Joss by the look in her eyes that she was mourning the loss of her friendship with Cyrus still.
How is he?
He looked fine. Healthy, I think. But worried. He said there's something in the woods. There was. There was something in the woods. Joss just wasn't sure whether or not that thing was Cyrus or something else. Patty folded her arms across her chest and tilted her head to the side in contemplation.
It could be a trick, something to distract from him.
Joss nodded.
His thoughts, exactly.
It could be. I need to look at the coroner's report for Tilly, the woman who lived near the cafe, just to confirm that she was killed by a vampire and not
something else.
How can I get my hands on it? I mean, the coroner isn't likely to just hand something like that over to a random teenager.
Patty tore her gaze away from him then and rubbed her hands on her arms as if trying to warm them against a non-existent chill in the air. It took her a moment to speak again, and when she did, she seemed extremely uncomfortable.
I can't help you, Joss. No one can.
She flicked her eyes to him momentarily, but then her gaze was gone again. Joss released a deep sigh, picked up his remaining cookie, and headed for the front door. As he opened it, he nodded to her over his left shoulder.
Okay. Then I'll help myself.
It was a huge relief to Joss that Santa Carla wasn't a really big town and that he was in good shape, because if he'd required a car to reach the coroner's office on the other side of town, he might not have made it to the unassuming building that housed it. He was glad that Henry wasn't tagging along because there was no way his cousin would go along with breaking and entering, especially in the name of the Slayer Society. Not to mention the countless questions that Henry would ask if Joss lied about their destination. But mostly, he was glad that Henry wasn't with him because Joss was relatively certain that if he got caught, his dad was going to skin him alive. The office was winding down business for the day, and for several minutes, Joss stood outside on the sidewalk next to a bus stop, looking expectantly down the street, hoping that no one would give him a second glance. After all, who suspected anything criminal from a clean-cut teenager waiting for the bus? He'd learned more from his online research that a person had to be 18 years of age to request medical records or a coroner's report, and since Joss wasn't yet that old, he was going to have to get creative. The office closed at 5 p.m., and that's when his creativity would kick in. A police officer passed by on the sidewalk and nodded a hello to Joss, who smiled in return and went back to pretending that he was waiting for an overdue bus. After a while, no one else exited the building, and Joss couldn't see any lights on inside. He glanced around casually to make sure he was in the clear. Once he was certain he was alone, Joss slipped around the side of the building, under the cover of several large bushes that obstructed the view of any passers-by. He walked along the brick wall until he spied his golden opportunity, a window fan that had been left wedged in an open window. It had been warm lately in Santa Carla, and apparently the person in that office had thought that a window fan was a wise move. Joss imagined their boss would be furious if they found out, but he wasn't here to teach anyone a lesson. He had to get in, get a glimpse at Tilly's coroner's report, and get out. The great thing about old buildings is that they're generally built to be sturdy, and architects who appreciated sturdiness also appreciated large windowsills. Joss jumped up, gripping his fingers on the windowsill by the fan, and pulled himself up until he was perched outside the window of one of the first-floor offices. Holding his breath and hoping that the open window meant that this office didn't have an alarm at the ready,
Joss gently pushed the window open. When no alarm sounded, he breathed a quiet sigh of relief and set the window fan inside on the floor before climbing in after it. The office itself was boring and plain. Steel desks, too many stacks of papers, and big gray filing cabinets lining the walls. After looking around for a bit, Joss realized that he was in the wrong place entirely. As quietly as possible, even though he was relatively certain that the building was empty, Joss moved out into the hall and checked a small directory hanging on the wall. The sheriff's office was on the third floor, so he could only hope that the coroner's office was as well. He climbed the stairs quickly, and when he reached the third floor, he was greeted by a small green placard next to the door that read, "Coroner's Office." He tried the knob, but someone had remembered to lock the door when they left, so Joss reached into his backpack and cursed under his breath. His lockpick set was sitting at home on his nightstand, forgotten there after its recent thorough cleaning. Picking a lock without the right tools wasn't impossible, but it sure as hell wasn't easy. What he really needed was a hairpin, and maybe an Allen wrench. Moving down the hall, he tried a few doors, but each was locked, so he made his way back down the stairs to the office he'd entered the building from. Sitting on the desk there was the only thing close enough to a lockpick that was going to get Joss inside the coroner's office. So he grabbed it and headed back upstairs, cursing in his mind the entire way. There's something jarring about the sound of broken glass, and as Joss smashed the small window with the heavy paperweight he'd found, two things happened. One, he hoped like hell that he was right about the building being empty, and two, he turned his head to the side and squeezed his eyes shut, fearing that a splinter of glass might fly out and cut him, despite the fact that the window of that particular door was made of tempered glass. The moment the paperweight made contact, the entire window cracked in a zillion tiny zigzag lines before crumbling to pieces all over the floor. It was a messy job, but Joss thought it was probably better to do a smash and grab and get out of the building as quickly as possible, rather than take his time performing a seamless, undetectable entry. He was quite certain, however, that his Uncle Abraham would disagree. He pushed open the door and, after just a few minutes, located the cabinets holding the files of the recently deceased. Luckily, the files were kept in pristine alphabetical order, so it wasn't long before Joss had Tilly's file in his hands and was poring over its contents. Most of what the coroner had to say about Tilly's death had been expected, but one small note gave him pause. Pause enough to realize that maybe the Slayer Society did know what they were talking about, and that maybe it really was a vampire that was responsible for the recent deaths in Santa Carla. Deceased showed signs of acute, severe anemia. Anemia, which meant the lack of red blood cells, which was exactly what happened when a vampire drained a person. Joss returned the file to the cabinet and headed back downstairs, his thoughts heavy. If the vampire that he'd killed in the woods wasn't the one responsible for the recent deaths, and he'd seen no evidence that had suggested another vampire was in the area, then it had to be Cyrus. This meant that Cyrus was lying to him. Again. And it meant something else, too. It meant that he was going to have to take Cyrus down. He was going to have to kill his friend all over again. What was it that people often said about history repeating itself? As Joss dropped outside of the open window that had been holding that fan, a voice greeted him, startling him some. But it wasn't a voice that he knew. As he turned around to face the speaker, he realized that he was dead the moment he saw his dad again. Standing there before him was the cop that he'd seen earlier out at the bus stop, with his hand on the gun on his hip. The officer said, "I'm betting you don't have any business being in there now, do you, son?" Fear sent a chill through Joss's limbs. He held his hands out to the side so that the officer wouldn't think he was trying to resist at all. "No, sir, but then again, I've never been a betting man." Joss smiled, hoping that a bit of humor might help him get off with a warning. When the officer didn't smile back, he thought that a different approach might be better. "I'm sorry, sir, I was just curious." As the cop gripped Joss's arm and led Joss away from the building, he said, Curiosity killed the cat, son. You should be more careful not to be so curious. Come on, let's get you home.
Joss had never been in the back of a police car before, and the moment he was, he hoped that he'd never be there again. There was something about knowing that he couldn't escape, that he was at the mercy of the officer that sent a sick feeling through his stomach. Or maybe that was just because he knew that once he got home, he was dead. The officer put the car in gear, and after a few moments of silence, he said,
"You want to tell me what you were looking for in there? The sheriff's office isn't exactly a place for teenagers. No drugs in there."
"I don't do drugs." Joss's words cut off the officer's last spoken syllable. Joss didn't do drugs, had never done drugs, would never do drugs. He didn't need a foreign substance to get a rush. His daily existence gave him all the rush he could handle. He didn't need to poison his body. Clarity was key when it came to slaying vampires.
"That's good. Drugs will mess up your life."
The officer glanced at Joss in the rearview mirror. His eyes were sharp blue.
So, what was it?
Joss could have lied, but he was tired of lying. Besides, something in the officer's eyes said that if Joss lied, he'd know somehow. So Joss went with the truth, no matter how strange it felt to do so. Shrugging, he said, "I heard about the death of this woman named Tilly by gardening shears, and I wanted to know if the coroner knew anything that the papers didn't." In the mirror, Joss saw the officer frown. After a moment, he said,
"I knew Tilly. Nice lady. Her death was pretty shocking. But trust me, kid, there's nothing else to know. Certainly nothing else to warrant a boy your age breaking into the coroner's office."
Joss disagreed, but he didn't offer up that bit of information. "I'm sorry."
"Sorry you did it, or sorry you got caught?"
The officer met his eyes again, and this time the crinkles by his eyes suggested a smile on his lips. "Honestly?" "Honest. The way non-slayers had the freedom to be all the time." "That second one."
"Promise me you'll stick to the library the next time you get curious."
Joss shook his head. It wasn't that he wanted to be a lawbreaker. It's just that sometimes, in order to do his duty as a slayer, he was forced to ignore the laws of mankind. "I'm afraid I can't do that, sir."
"Well, then at least promise me that you'll stay away from the coroner's office. Next time I catch you, it'll be handcuffs and paperwork."
Outside the window was a blur of green as they passed trees and grass and greenery. Joss bet that if they slowed down a bit, it would be really beautiful scenery. Life was like that, he imagined. If he could just slow down, maybe he could see the beauty in things. "Okay," he met the cop's reflection again. "I promise."
"Where do you live exactly?"
Joss was tempted not to tell him. Prison might be a better option than facing his dad's wrath, but eventually he told the officer where he lived, and after what felt like a long car ride, they pulled into the driveway where Joss's dad looked up from the woodpile with surprise, fear, and then fury. Joss sank down in his seat, watching as the officer got out and spoke with his dad, kicking himself for not thinking to lie and give the policeman Patty's address instead. Then he came back to the car, opened Joss's door.
"No more trouble, son. You hear me? Next time, this'll be serious."
Only it was already serious. Joss was in very real trouble with his dad, and he wasn't exactly sure how to face it. As the cop pulled away, he turned back to his dad and tried, "Dad, I'm sorry, I was just..."
"Don't talk to me. I don't want to hear it."
He shook his head, his eyes burning with anger. Joss understood that. He did. Who wouldn't be angry at their kid for coming home in the back of a cop car? It was a perfectly sensible reaction. But he hadn't even given Joss a chance to explain. Not that Joss had really taken the time to come up with a believable explanation. The truth wasn't an option here. "But Dad, I..." He tossed another log on the woodpile, but did it with such force that he might have been tossing it more at the pile than on it.
"First you attack Henry, and now you get brought home by the police? What's wrong with you, Joss?" more than he would ever know. Joss was a liar. He was a secret keeper. He was a killer. But all for the right reasons, or so he thought. What if the reasons that he deemed to be right were actually wrong? Then he was just a liar, a secret keeper, and a killer without good cause. Then he was just a terrible person. Joss shrugged, shoving his thumbs in his front jeans pockets. A lot, I guess.
You guess,
his dad snorted then and tossed another hunk of wood onto the pile before turning back to Joss and pointing an accusing finger at him.
You're damn right a lot. Why can't you be more like Greg or Henry? They'd never be so reckless.
Joss stood there stunned. What was he supposed to say to that? How was he supposed to respond to the admission that his dad wished that he were someone else, rather than his reckless, imperfect self? Fighting tears, Joss turned toward the house and hurried away. He could only leave his dad with the words that he feared most.
You're right.
Echoing after him were his father's angry words.
Don't you walk away from me when I'm talking to you!
As Joss stepped inside the side door, he passed by Henry, whose wrist was in a brace. With his uninjured hand, Henry squeezed Joss's shoulder sympathetically. But Joss shook him off and hurried upstairs. He wasn't sure where this unexpected bout of empathy had come from, but it was a case of too little, too late. He didn't want Henry's sympathy. He didn't want his father's approval. All he really wanted at the moment was to be left alone. 12. Working it out. Joss ran as hard and fast as he could, straight at the pole that held the ratty-looking tetherball. As he jumped, he focused hard on the way that his muscles felt, on the speed that he knew he was capable of. He focused, true enough, on anything that wasn't his dad or Henry or his home life or anything at all like that. He focused only on what he could control. And that was this. The way his body moved. The shape his physical form was in. Because focusing on his emotional form was the last thing that Joss wanted. Physical stuff was easy. Emotional, not so much. He'd snuck out of the house to come here, to gain some perspective on things and to run through some maneuvers. But if his dad found out, he was as good as dead. He was amazed that his dad had let him walk into the house without strangling him, but the grounding that had come after his dad had entered was no surprise at all. Not that it mattered. How can you ground a slayer? He jumped high, planting his left foot on the pole and pushed off, launching himself toward the swing set. As he flew through the air, he focused on the landing that he wanted to achieve, repeating three words in his brain: visualize and realize. His right hand closed around the metal of the slanted pole of the swing set. Kicking his legs at just the right angle, it provided him with just enough momentum to make a full circle around the pole. When he was again under the A-frame support, he grabbed the other pole in his left hand. Joss alternated hands, climbing closer to the top of the frame. Right, left, right, left. Once there, he reached out for the large crossbeam at the top of the swings. This pole was much bigger than the side supports. His palms wet with sweat, Joss found it much more difficult to maintain his grip, but he held fast, pushing his efforts onward. He pulled himself up, bending over the beam at the waist. Then he swung one leg over the bar and stood nimbly on the top of it. Running forward, one foot directly in front of the other, he worked his way ever closer to the end of the swing set. At the last second, Joss jumped off the beam, grabbed a tree branch, and swung forward, landing with his feet directly on the top of a long metal slide. With the kind of finesse possessed by only slayers, he glided effortlessly to the bottom, coming to rest, still standing in the sand below. He quickly squashed his urge to pat himself on the back for doing a good job at his various training exercises. After all, he didn't deserve congratulations or admiration for running through basic maneuvers. He didn't deserve such an arrogant show of self-flattery. He'd done nothing. Nothing but fail. For only the briefest of moments, Joss paused to catch his breath. His muscles were burning. his forehead dripping with sweat. A strange pain was gnawing at his right side, just beneath the ribs. But all that Joss could think about was Cyrus, and how he'd failed both the society and Cyrus by not killing the vampire the moment that he encountered him here in Santa Carla. Not to mention that he had also failed himself. If he had killed Cyrus at that moment, it would have pleased the society to know that he fully understood his job as a slayer. It would have proven his loyalty to them. It would have made them believe in him once again. Killing Cyrus would have been an act of kindness, really. What person, what slayer, would really want to live the life of a vampire? What if Cyrus was suffering in this form? What if he was trapped? Joss might have set him free with one swipe of a stake. It would have been the right thing to do. So why did the idea of doing it make Joss feel queasy? Maybe he was losing his edge. Maybe the Slayer Society was right to be concerned. He could run as many maneuvers and training exercises as he wanted around this old, abandoned playground. None of it mattered. What mattered was that he had failed to kill Cyrus that summer, and he had failed again this summer. He was a failure. He was weak. And he wasn't at all sure that he cared. So what if he was weak? So what if he was feeling more than a little conflicted over vampires and their place in this world? Was he really the only one, the first of his kind, the sole slayer to wonder whether or not all vampires were truly evil? And if he was being the first to wonder really such a horrible thing? Cyrus had been like a father figure to him, and Vlad had been his friend. The truth was, when no one else was around and Joss was left alone with his thoughts, he treasured the time that he'd spent with each of them. And he immediately felt guilty for doing so. Were these thoughts, these emotions, wrong simply because the Slayer Society said that they were? Or was it even the smallest bit possible that it was okay to feel positive emotions about a sworn enemy? He wondered if the society was right about vampires being able to trick your emotional reaction to situations. Had Cyrus and Vlad hit switches in his brain, causing him to feel this way? Or was it how he really felt? Joss shook his head and started running laps around the playground, trying to clear his tormented thoughts away. He didn't want to think about Cyrus and Vlad anymore. He just wanted all that he had been through to fall away and crumble into the dust of his memories. But as his feet slowed and Joss wiped salty sweat and tears from his eyes, he saw the truth of it. There was no going back. He'd been set on a path of discovery, and he had to face it head on if he had any hope at all of understanding what was right and what was wrong. He'd taken an oath, a promise, to the Slayer Society that he would do all that he could for the good of mankind. And if that meant losing a friend, if it meant losing a father figure, then that was the way that it had to be. A father figure. Joss blinked with sudden, sad, angry realization. By the time he'd met Cyrus, Cyrus had already been turned into a vampire. Therefore, Cyrus already had vampire motivations. What if Cyrus had honed in on Joss's desperate need for a father figure in his life from the moment that they'd met, and had just been using that need to get Joss to give him what he wanted? What if Cyrus's apparent affection for him had been nothing but a mirage, a tool to manipulate a young, inexperienced slayer into doing his bidding? What if that's what Cyrus was doing now, and that's why Joss had stayed his hand and failed to kill Cyrus when he saw him in the woods? What if Cyrus had been controlling Joss's emotions with his mind? Joss balled his fists tightly at his sides. If that were true, then it would mean that Cyrus was the killer after all. If that were true, it would mean that Joss had been nothing but a pawn in a blood-sucking monster's twisted game. The sun dipped down below the trees then, turning the sky above a fiery shade of orange. Joss retrieved his t-shirt from where it lay on the rusted merry-go-round, and as he slipped it over his head, he hoped that Cyrus's telepathy was honing in on him. As hard as he could, he thought about his former friend and mentor, and hoped that Cyrus would hear his thoughts and listen. His message as he stepped from the playground and into the surrounding woods was short but clear.
Cyrus, we need to talk.
As he lifted his left foot from the grass of the playground area, Joss moved into the woods. His hand found the comfort of his stake in its holster. It was time for honesty. It was time for truth. It was time for him and Cyrus to have a little chat about motives. And only one of them would get out of the woods alive. 13. A conversation with Cyrus. It amazed Joss how stepping from an open, grassy area and into the edge of a forest could affect the light so drastically. It was almost like moving between worlds. In one, there was the soft glow of a between time, where everything was bathed in the warm tones of sunset. But on the other side of that wall of trees, there was darkness. Little light filtered in. Shadows of the towering tree trunks blended in with the undergrowth. Wind moved branches, creating strange woodland demons in Joss's imagination. It was difficult to tell the difference between myth and reality. In the forest, it was night. Night, the realm of vampires. Joss wasn't certain that what he was doing, wandering into the woods hoping that Cyrus had somehow honed in on his thoughts at that precise moment and heeded his call, wasn't the dumbest thing that he had ever done. But what did it hurt to try to reach Cyrus with his thoughts? So what if he came out on the other side looking stupid? He'd only look stupid to himself and to Joss. It was worth that risk. Especially if he made contact with Cyrus, and they could settle this all at last. The blue tint that pervaded the forest gave way to gray, then black, as night fell hard and fast. It was difficult to see in the darkness of the woods, but Joss relaxed his eyes and allowed them to adjust to the change in light as he surveyed his surroundings for any sign of Cyrus. In the distance, he could hear the faint song of frogs calling to future mates. Not 10 yards to his left, there was the sound of some creature crawling through the undergrowth. Standing with his back to a thick-trunked tree, his stake firmly grasped in his right hand, the slayer, Joss McMillan, laid in wait.
"About what, Joss? What do we need to talk about?"
The voice came from behind him, but there had been no sounds preceding it, as if Cyrus hadn't moved at all to get here. He wasn't there, and then he was. Joss couldn't help but marvel at a vampire's unnatural speed. Joss spun around and found Cyrus standing on the other side of the tree, in the exact position that Joss had been standing just a moment before. His face looked drawn, troubled. His posture suggested that he was weary. But it might have been an act. Vampires were tricky that way, especially this vampire.
"Shall we discuss your nightmares? The murders that have been happening around Santa Carla? The weather?"
Cyrus met his eyes then, and Joss could tell that Cyrus knew exactly why Joss had called him here tonight. As if on cue, Cyrus's eyes moved to the stake in Joss's hand.
"What else is there for a vampire and a slayer to discuss?"
Joss didn't move, but he did tighten his grip on his stake a bit, on the chance that Cyrus might make an unexpected move toward him.
"First, we can discuss the murders if you like."
Cyrus raised an eyebrow then, but not in any way that suggested that Joss didn't know what he was talking about. Just perhaps that Joss had only barely scratched the surface of his theories when it came to the murders and who, or what, might have committed them.
"It'll be a short conversation, Joss. I'm afraid I don't have much to offer on the subject. And what I do know about them, you wouldn't believe. Not even if I swore on Cat's life."
Hearing him say that gave Joss brief pause. Cyrus would never swear on Cat's life. She was his daughter. She was his everything. But he didn't give voice to his doubts. Simply tilted his head at his former mentor and friend and tightened his jaw a bit.
"Try me."
Cyrus nodded to the stake in Joss's hand.
"You don't need that."
But he did need his stake, just in case Cyrus lunged at him. He needed it to protect himself,
to defend himself from the murderous rampage of a bloodthirsty monster. Didn't he? I'll be the judge of that. Suddenly, the stake felt very heavy in his hand, but he gripped it anyway. Were you and another vampire working in tandem to take innocent lives around Santa Carla? Cyrus shook his head, meeting Joss's eyes, but Joss could tell that the vampire's focus was still on his stake. No, but I know the gentleman to whom you are referring. I simply brought him along to assist me in my search for the killer. But you made fast work of him, didn't you? Did it occur to you that his actions toward you might only have been in self-defense and out of fear? No, Cyrus was wrong. That vampire had been trying to kill him. You're right on one thing, though, Cyrus continued. It is a vampire that's responsible for these deaths, but not a normal vampire. Something else. Something monstrous. Joss met Cyrus's eyes, an angry heat rising up his neck and enveloping his face. You're monstrous! Cyrus held his hands out in front of him in a pleading gesture. When he spoke, his tone was soft, gentle, as if he wanted to do his best to protect Joss from whatever it was that Joss was thinking about doing. No, Joss. Fangs are not. I am your friend. The last word that Cyrus spoke echoed through Joss's skull like the lie that it was. Who was Cyrus kidding? He wasn't Joss's friend. He was the enemy, a monster, someone who'd used Joss's weakness to get what he'd wanted. A friend didn't lie to you. A friend didn't manipulate you. Besides, he'd danced this dance of betrayal before, with a boy named Vladimir Todd. With fury building up in his chest, Joss made his move. He shot straight for Cyrus, raising his stake high, his words spilling out like fire from his tongue. Like hell you are! Cyrus grabbed him by the wrist and held Joss's weapon still. His eyes had lit up with something mimicking anger, but his words came out sounding more like regret. I am, Joss. I know you don't believe it, but I am your friend. They each struggled for control of the stake. But just as Joss was certain he had the upper hand, Cyrus slipped the wooden weapon from his grip and tossed it several feet behind him. After he did, Joss shoved uselessly, angrily at his chest. You betrayed me, you son of a— Joss! Cyrus shook his head, his eyes rimmed in red and shimmering. I had no choice. I promise you that. If there had been another way, if there had been any other way, Joss, you made me think you cared about me. But you were using me. All along, every moment, every exchange. Why? He wasn't shouting anymore, and he was no longer certain that he'd really intended to kill Cyrus here in the woods. He'd just wanted answers. He'd just wanted to understand. Cyrus ran a frustrated hand through his hair, raking it back from his face. The sight of his upset put a hard rock at the center of Joss's core. I didn't want to use you, Joss. I truly care about you. You're like a son to me. Cyrus's words tugged at Joss's being, threatening to rip apart any resolve that remained. All Joss had ever wanted was for his dad to love him, and to be the way that he'd been before a vampire had stolen Cecile away from them forever, smashing their family apart as it exited their home. All he'd wanted was to know that he still had a dad somehow. But Cyrus couldn't be his dad, because flawed or not, he had a dad already. Joss shook his head at Cyrus, his words bitter. Well, you're not like a father to me. I already have a father, remember? Yes, but I thought... The light in Cyrus's eyes changed then, as if something had just been answered for him. He seemed sad, but at the same time, strangely at peace. Joss wondered what he was thinking. It doesn't matter what I thought. I never did anything purposely to hurt you, Joss. I need you to trust me on that. Why? Why should I trust a monster like you? Because you're the only one who knows that I'm alive, who still has the ability to see past the fangs to the man beneath this vampire exterior. Cyrus shook his head and stepped closer, placing a caring hand on Joss's shoulder. As he squeezed it, he said, "I'm not just a vampire, Joss, and I think you know that. I'm Cyrus, and I never stopped caring about you." It might have been a mistake to believe Cyrus, but Joss couldn't help it. He believed every word, and at the moment, he didn't give a crap if he only believed because of vampire mind control or some other supernatural thought manipulation. He believed Cyrus, and Joss was relieved to have Cyrus back in his life. He could only imagine how Cyrus's daughter would feel in the same situation. "Does Kat know that you're still alive?"
"No." Cyrus released a breath and seemed to relax some.
"Why haven't you told her yet?"
"I'm worried about her reaction. Kat wants me to go through with our plans to turn her into a vampire, and I cannot bear the thought of that sweet girl becoming what I have become. I just can't take the idea of her doing all that I have done simply in the name of survival, not to mention the politics."
"If that's the issue, and trust me, I'm not saying it's a good idea to turn your daughter into a blood-sucking creature of the night, then why not just find some other vampire to turn her?" It seemed simple enough. But then, if it were really that simple, why hadn't Kat just found a vampire to turn her already? Especially since she was under the impression that her dad was dead.
"I know Kat," Cyrus sighed. "She'd only ever turn if it was by her father's doing."
"She'd understand, you know. If you took the time to explain it to her, she'd probably be so relieved that you're still alive that she'd forget all about becoming a vampire herself."
"That's what Joss was hoping, anyway. Kat could be pretty scary as a human. As a vampire, she'd be unstoppable."
"You think so?"
Joss nodded in response, and Cyrus took a moment to consider this. Then he shook his head, his shoulders weighed down by guilt. "Losing me has probably affected her in the worst ways.
Well, she's kind of been stalking me. I think she intends to kill me, or take my cousin away or something, I'm not sure."
He shrugged, hoping that Cyrus would help him somehow. If anyone could talk some sense into Kat, it was Cyrus.
Cyrus nodded and patted Joss on the back. "Maybe I can talk some sense into her. Will you come with me so I can reveal myself to her and explain everything?"
"Of course, Cyrus."
A smile found its way to Joss's lips at last. Maybe everything really was going to be okay after all. As they moved toward the edge of the forest, Joss cast Cyrus a sidelong glance and said,
"Hey, what did you mean when you said to trust my dreams?"
But Cyrus didn't have a chance to answer. Something unseen whipped between them, brushing Joss's hair back from his forehead for a second, and the next thing Joss knew, Cyrus was lying on the forest floor, coughing. Blood lined his lips, fear filled his eyes, and the last thing that Joss noticed before the light left his mentor's eyes was Joss's own stake sticking out of Cyrus's chest. His body fell still, and Joss felt a black cloud of sorrow envelop his soul. Cyrus was gone. For real this time. And it had been at Joss's hand, in a way. If Joss hadn't brought a weapon of vampire destruction into this scenario, maybe Cyrus would still be alive. If Joss hadn't... It was his fault. It was all his fault. Joss moved to Cyrus and dropped to his knees. There was a brief moment as he stretched his hand forward to check for a pulse, when Joss thought that maybe it had all been a dream, a horrific nightmare, and soon he'd awaken in his bed. But the second his fingers touched the part of Cyrus's neck where his carotid artery should have been pulsing, all of Joss's hopes flew away, like a puff of smoke. Cyrus was dead. His chest seized, his vision blurred. He whipped his head around, trying to get a look at Cyrus's killer, but he was alone in the woods, alone in life, alone in his grief. And he had lost his father figure for the second time.
14. The onset of understanding. The morning sun poured in through Joss's window the following day, but he didn't get out of bed, and only barely moved, just enough to lift his head and gaze at his window, guessing that it was at least 9, and maybe something closer to 10 o'clock. He'd spent much of the night searching the woods for Cyrus's killer, and when the sun had hinted that it might soon come up, he'd begrudgingly made his way home. The moment his head had hit the pillow, he was out. Insomnia usually occupied his nights, but strangely, in his grief, Joss had found the ability to sleep deeply. Maybe it was his subconscious's way of protecting him from the pain that he felt while he was awake. Or maybe it was his body's way of just shutting down until Joss figured out exactly how to deal with how much he was hurting over the death of Cyrus. It really made him think about his mom and dad and how they were dealing with the death of Cecile by not dealing with it at all. He watched those curtains for a while, blocking out all thought, and finally Joss sat up in bed. It was time to begin his day, grief or no grief. After a quick hot shower, he dressed and made his way silently down the stairs. His mom was sitting at the dining room table, a steaming mug of coffee clutched in her hand. There was no sign of his dad or Henry, for which he was extremely grateful. He sat down in the chair across from his mother and folded his fingers together, silently musing precisely how he should begin. As if waking from a deep daydream, his mother blinked and finally took notice of him.
"Oh, good morning, Joss. Sleep okay?"
It was a brief moment of clarity in her medication-induced fog. Joss knew that he'd better seize the moment before she was lost to him again. "Not really. I don't usually sleep very well."
"Nightmares?"
The question rolled off her tongue as if she were well aware of his nocturnal issues. But she wasn't. Of that he was almost certain. "No, not last night."
"That's good."
She put the mug to her lips and sipped. When she spoke again, her voice was hushed in concern.
"Sometimes I hear you cry out at night. I worry."
A lump appeared in Joss's throat. She worried about him. He honestly hadn't thought that she was capable of that anymore. He'd thought that she was lost to him forever, the way that Cecile was, the way that Cyrus was. He stretched his right hand out slowly and took his mom's hand in his. It took a second, but she finally met his eyes. They sat there in silence, holding hands. Joss